The Office of Personnel Management and General Services Administration wrapping up an industry day on their latest contracting opportunity. Human Capital and Training Solutions, or HCATS, is a human resources and training contract vehicle for every agency. Requests for proposal likely to come from OPM and GSA by June 30th. Brian Friel is a government contracts analyst at Bloomberg Government, my first guest on Industry Chatter today, looking at HCATS and others on the top 20 federal opportunities right now. Brian, thanks for coming on today. What is HCATS exactly? What can vendors expect to see on it when the RFPs come out?
Sure. So it's really the government's central contract, or will be the government's central contract for training solutions and HR services. There was a contract that OPM ran for a number of years, really two decades, called Training and Management Assistance. And there was an attempt by OPM to recompete that contract a few years ago. And it just sort of collapsed under the weight of protests. And so for a couple of years, there's been no central human capital and training contract available for the government. So this is going to be a really huge deal for companies in that space, and they can expect, you know, a few $100 million a year in business to run through that contract once it gets up and running.
You're reporting the request for proposal set to be released by June 30th, bids due by August of this year, and it's a $5 billion contract. There's a lot of money to go through this.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, this is a really interesting way of seeking bids. The government is asking the companies to self-score. So they're going to submit sort of volumes of data that show that they've got experience in these areas. And then they have to themselves say, you know, this is how I would rank my proposal. And then the government will pick the top 40 in each of the categories based on those self-scores. And so that's why there's going to be such a fast turnaround with the bids, with the RFPs, you know, with the RFP coming out in June and the bids due by August. And we can expect awards, you know, probably by the end of the year.
That's an interesting approach. I had a college professor once that invited us to grade our own tests. And you can imagine we all did very well. How do you sort those out? Or do we have any idea how they'll expect to sort those out? I mean, I can't imagine somebody'd submit a bid and say, this actually isn't that good according to the scale you've laid out.
Yeah, well, there is, you know, the government will obviously do its own sort of evaluation based on those what the companies put in. But the attempt is to make it a fairly objective approach, where, you know, you have to show a certain volume of previous government work in these areas. It's the same method that was used on the recent OASIS contract for professional services that GSA put in, and what it tends to do is end up with awards to very experienced contractors. So this isn't going to be a contract where there are lots of new entrants to the government. It's going to be companies that have been doing business with the government for a long time.
There is a separate track for small businesses here too, I see.
That's right. But again, even there, you're probably going to see most of the awardees fairly experienced government contractors, albeit obviously small businesses.
Brian Friel, Bloomberg Government, my guest, looking at the top 20 federal opportunities as it stands right now. The one of the newest additions is HCATS. And you're reporting this proposals will be evaluated using the highest technically rated with fair and reasonable prices method. I'm not an expert on this stuff like you are, but that's not one I'm familiar with. Is this kind of a new way of evaluating?
It is. You know, it's designed to basically to simplify the acquisition process on the government side. So it's tied to that scorecard approach where the companies have to self-score. And basically it means that as long as the companies are proposing, you know, reasonable prices, then the government will look at those scores and go down the list until they reach number 40 and then draw a line. And any company that isn't in the top 40 in each of the small business and the large business tracks is left out of the contract. And one thing that method does is it lessens the likelihood of success for any protesters, because it's the GAO looked at this approach for OASIS, which was awarded last year, and basically, you know, said, you know, set aside all of the protests that have been filed. So it's unlikely that anybody who doesn't make that initial cut is going to be able to successfully protest. However, it's likely that there will be on-ramp opportunities, which means that in future years, companies that didn't make it at first may be able to convince the government to let them on later.
That's another, sounds like another attempt, and likely successful attempt, to tamp down at least the number of potential protests.
Right, and it's also a way of the government making sure that as small businesses get larger and no longer qualify for small business status, that the government can bring on companies that still meet those requirements and can help them satisfy their small business goalings.
Yeah, and keep all those slots filled. You also are reporting about two other opportunities that are coming into the top 20 federal opportunities. One at Sandia National Laboratories. What's going on there, Brian?
So this is one of the largest contracts in operation in the entire government. It's the Energy Department's biggest contract to manage Sandia National Laboratories. Lockheed Martin has been running it since 1993, or its predecessor Martin Marietta, and then Lockheed. And so it's a really long-term incumbent, but there's been a recent spate of successful challenges to long-standing incumbents at the Energy Department. Four of the five largest Energy Department recompetitions over the past 3.5 years have been won by the challengers, and so that gives some optimism to some of the companies that may challenge Lockheed. Fluor is the one company that has publicly talked in the past about bidding against Lockheed. So at the very least, we might see a big fight between them. But other companies that that do major Energy Department work, such as Babcock and Wilcox and AECOM and Chicago Bridge and Iron and Hunt and Ingalls, they could all form teams and bid for this, which is really sort of the biggest prize at the Energy Department.
Do we have a sense of what common threads, if any, there are in those the challengers winning the recompetes at the Energy Department? That sounds like an interesting trend that I'm not really hearing many other agencies.
Well, there was one case where the Y-12 nuclear complex in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, was challenger won. And if you looked at the performance evaluations, which are made public through the Freedom of Information Act process, the incumbent contractor had pretty low scores. The Energy Department was obviously sort of unhappy with them. Lockheed scores for Sandia have actually been pretty high, but the Energy Department did in its most recent evaluation express some concern that the management hasn't been attentive enough to the relationship with the Energy Department. So a lot of it is about that relationship with the Energy Department, making sure the customer is happy, and the challenger is obviously finding those places where the Energy Department or whatever the customer is unhappy with the incumbent and seeking to show how they might do a better job.
Another entry in your top 20 federal opportunities at Bloomberg government this week, Brian, is the SPARC contract at CMS. What's that all about?
Yeah, so CMS is the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. They run, they're really, at the end of the day, the largest government agency by how much money they spend out through the major federal healthcare programs. And their biggest IT services contract right now is a contract called Enterprise Systems Development, which has 16 companies that are winning about $800 million a year in total. So it's a huge contract. It's been in operation since 2007 and expires in 2017. So the agency is now getting ready for a follow-on contract, and they're calling it SPARC. It's very early stages. The agency is sort of reviewing its acquisition strategy and hasn't released information about how it will be structured. But my guess is that it's likely to seek a lot more small businesses. One striking thing that happened on this contract, because there's been so much work that has come through that agency in large part because of the Affordable Care Act implementation, has been that many of the small businesses on that contract have been acquired over the past few years. So it's actually hard for the agency to meet its small business goals because many of the small businesses it had on that contract are no longer small. So I think what we can expect to see there is lots of opportunities for 8A, for women-owned businesses, for hub zones, for service-disabled veteran small businesses to come in and get into that agency.
I keep hearing, Brian, from a lot of folks that are involved, not just in small business operation, but in M&A, today, that there's a lot of that going around right now. Can we expect to see more changes in various vehicles maybe that already exist as they run into that same problem and maybe don't have the on-ramps that you talked about in the HCATs?
Well, a good example of that is at the Homeland Security Department, the major IT services contract there is called Eagle 2. Mm-hmm. And there's a provision in that contract that actually says that if you won a small business contract and are subsequently acquired, that you can no longer compete for orders. That now, I haven't seen that in a lot of other contracts, and it's to be determined yet if we'll see that on the Spark contract. But agencies are definitely concerned about this because, you know, they're held to the fire by the administration and by Congress on whether they're meeting their small business goals. And if they, if their major small businesses are being acquired, that just makes it really hard for them to sustain their small business rates.
And as the market continues to go in the direction it appears it's going, that's something we're likely to see a lot more of. Brian, I appreciate your insight as always. Thank you very much for coming on today.
Thanks, Francis.